You are Locked On Bills, your daily Buffalo Bills podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, Bills Mafia? It's Joe Marino from the Draft Network, and I'm your host of Locked On Bills. This episode of Locked On Bills is brought to you by McDonald's, proudly serving community since 1965. McDonald's has always been more than just a place to get tasty, affordable food. It's an unofficial community center. A big thank you to our friends at McDonald's for always being there. Happy Friday to you, and thank you for making Locked On Bills your first listen every day. I'm very excited for our conversation today. In just a moment, I'll be joined by Bruce Nolan of the Bruce Exclusive Podcast, part of the Buffalo Rumblings podcast feed. And we are going to have a conversation about the state of the Buffalo Bills defense now that we're in the bye week and the Bills are gearing up for a long stretch of games to close out the season and hopefully a long playoff run. We had a very similar conversation earlier this week with Nate Geary focusing on the offense, but today is all about the defense. Also, make sure that you come back tomorrow. I'm doing another episode of Herd Mentality this week because I had so many submissions, and obviously the Herd Mentality episode we had yesterday focused a lot on some of the big questions coming out of the Tennessee game. Our conversation tomorrow will not include any Tennessee Titans talk. It'll be some of the big picture questions that were asked to me. There's some good general football questions that will be included. So don't miss that tomorrow, a Saturday, a weekend podcast for you as the Bills are on a bye week, but we're going to keep things rolling here. There's so much to discuss all the time. And so another weekend podcast is coming your way tomorrow. Football is in full swing. The NBA season just tipped off, and of course, so did the hockey season. So make sure that you are going over to betonline.ag. It is the number one spot for all the basketball, football, hockey action this season. They have a new updated site that you can check out. They have more odds, props, and lines than ever before. And if you head over there now, you can take advantage of our welcome bonus. You'll receive a 50% bonus on your first deposit when you use our promo code LOCKEDON. From basketball, football, baseball, NHL, boxing, UFC, Vegas casino games, they have it all. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports, and BetOnline is where the game starts. I'm joined now by Bruce Nolan, the host of the Bruce Exclusive Podcast, as well as Food for Thought, is part of the Buffalo Rumblings podcast feed. And Bruce, I always enjoy talking football with you, and it's good to have you back on the show for the first time in a while.
Yeah, I was starting to get a little bit of a complex, but now that I'm back on the show, I'm feeling a little bit better. I just need to kind of deep breath. It's fine. We're still good. Everything's great. Our dynasty fantasy football competition has not started to bleed over where now, like, you don't want to have me on the show. I'm good. Everything's good.
Well, I know that you've had a lot going on personally with some work-related matters, and so I've tried to leave you alone for a little bit, but man, if I could have you on the podcast every week, I'd do it. So speaking of the fantasy football stuff, I'm really tired of our league just giving you all the good players for modest compensation, but that's probably for another day. we are here to talk about the state of the Buffalo Bills defense at the bye week. And like I said, with Nate Geary on our Tuesday or Wednesday conversation this week, I think this is the third year in a row we've hooked up for a bi-week conversation about the Bills defense. And so thanks for doing it with me. And like I told Nate, it would be weird if you didn't in future years. So appreciate you kind of, you know, making this a bit of a tradition here during the bi-weeks.
Tradition is important. It's a big part. I don't know if you've ever seen Fiddler on the Roof, but tradition, huge part of the fabric of society. And quite frankly, I don't want to be responsible for the collapse of human civilization as we know it. So tradition is very important that I hold my end up.
Fiddler on the Roof reference here within the first couple of minutes. Let's get to the Bills defense. That's what we're here to talk about. And Bruce, with the exception of the last three quarters against Tennessee, the Bills defense has been absolutely exceptional this season. So if you will, I'm requesting the plurality pie, which is very difficult to say, by the way, when it comes to the reasons why the Bills defense has bounced back and played at such a high level so far in 2021. And I'm sure anyone who's familiar with you knows all about the plurality pie.
I really should have named it something different. I've never been really good with names. The thing that you know as QB Stew was originally the quarterback holistic composite amalgamation. That was what it was originally called. And then someone emailed me and said, hey, why don't you call it Stew? Because you made a reference to it being a stew and you could make an acronym out of it for statistical talent evaluation worksheet. So I am not good with names and naming things. So I apologize ahead of time for plurality pie. But if I were to do a plurality pie, we were to bake a plurality pie and cut it into sections based on what I think is having the most impact on the Bills defense this year, right at the top, 30% of plurality pie is the health of the linebackers. We have gone over and over and over again that this front seven, and specifically linebackers, are a big part of Sean McDermott's defense. We always talk about the Carolina defenses and how great and legendary they were with, you know, Thomas Davis and Luke Kuechly, and at the very end, Shaq Thompson. This is a linebacker-centric defense. And when you re-sign Matt Milano, when you already have a first-round pick with a fifth-year option extended to Tremaine Edmonds, you know that they're serious about investing resources in it because they're seriously important positions to the overall team. Tremaine Edmonds, I made a comment on an episode of Bruce Exclusive recently where I said that it almost feels like 2020 was Tremaine Edmonds' blip year. He got blipped out at the end of 2019 and nothing really happened in 2020. And then in 2021, he just came back and started right on the trajectory he was on before. Because I would make an argument that we are seeing a better version of Tremaine Edmonds than we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is the fact that he's not tentative and scared of a really bad shoulder injury, which is changing the way he runs and changing the way he approaches contact. He's playing fast. He's playing physical. But I don't think he's playing fast and physical. And he wouldn't have played that way last year if it weren't for the injury. I think he's playing fast and physical, knowing that he probably would have played that way last year had he not banged up the shoulder. So for me, 30% is linebacker health. I also think it's not necessarily correlative, but you know, Matt Milano starts to get banged up and all of a sudden the defense has a bad game. I think these things are correlative. So the biggest piece to me is linebacker health. 21% is Taron Johnson improvement. We've said it ad nauseum, but Taron Johnson went from Kansas City Chiefs game regular season 2020, benched. Kansas City Chiefs game regular season 2021, extended to a market contract. That is a big change in a year. He went from, you're not getting the job done, to, we would like you to continue to do this job for a while now for this team. That's a big, big change. And Taron Johnson is the second player who just flashes this year more so than he has. I was a huge Taron Johnson fan after his rookie year. I was like, this guy is going to be an impact nickel defender. And then he just never really took off. And this year he has. So I think Taron Johnson improvement is 21%. 18% is the upgrade at edge ability. Now, obviously going from Trent Murphy to Gregory Rousseau right away is an upgrade in talent. But having more depth there, having F.A. Obada, having Boogie Basham, I think that that matters. I think that having waves and waves, because that's the design of Sean McDermott's defense. We talked about it when we talked about linebackers. We said, how is it designed to run? It's designed to run with linebacker-centric, two really good linebackers, and waves of a good to above average defensive ends. That's how it was always designed to run. That's how he wants to make it happen. And when Trent Murphy is making $8 million in inactive, that has a tendency to kind of hamper that a little bit. So the third thing, 18%, is edge upgrade in talent level. 16% is the return of Star Lotulelei. One of the things that I mentioned this offseason is that the return of Star Lotulelei would give us one reasonably competent one technique on the roster. One, because we didn't know what we were going to see from Harrison Phillips. We were hopeful that Star Lotulelei would come back and be a reasonable facsimile for what we saw in 2019. That is, Star Lotulelei might be better this year than he was in 2019. Somehow going away for a year in a COVID opt-out season at the age of 31 inexplicably made him a better pass rusher. No idea how that happened, but I'll take it. The return of Star Lotulelei has mattered. In addition, Ed Oliver has seen single teams where he can start to show up, and that trickles through the rest of the defensive line. 15% is other. There's always things like aggressiveness with the play calls, trickling through things. There's always things like Levi Wallace, Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer, another year in the system, all this stuff like that. You really can't qualify, but you know it's out there. So there's always an other section. So 30% linebacker health, 21% Taron Johnson improvement, 18% edge upgrade, 16% return of Star Latulé, 15% other. 100% plurality pie as to the correlations between those things and the improvement in the defense.
I think that went pretty much how I thought it would. I wasn't exactly sure how you were going to distribute the percentages, but I think in terms of identifying the variables that have made this defense bounce back, I think you hit on the stuff that I was expecting. You said one thing in there about Trent Murphy, and he was inactive for $8 million. I feel like Vernon Butler is this year's Trent Murphy, where the Bills had an opportunity to kind of get out of that deal. They restructured it, and now he's a healthy scratch every week. And, you know, clearly they like Phillips and Zimmer over him. And so not that we're talking about bad parts of the defense at this point in the conversation, but, you know, Vernon Butler's that frustrating guy this year for me that is on the team, is, commanding a notable amount of cap space and isn't really helping.
Well, you just spoiled something for later, but I mean, I guess, okay. You know, you mentioned to me in the notes, you're like, okay, who do you want to see more of? Who do you want to see less of? And Vernon Butler is that spoiler for me. Vernon Butler is, I want to see more of this player. I want to see less of Vernon Butler. And the extension to that is, well, he's been inactive. Yes, I want to see even less than that. Even less than inactive. If I see him in a press conference, I'm going to be upset. But no, I agree with you. I do think that there is a level of conservatism that is going along with Sean McDermott's defensive line decisions. We're seeing it with Trent Murphy last year. We saw it with Vernon Butler. He just wants that safety blanket where, what if this rookie doesn't develop? What if this person doesn't take the next step? What if what if it bottoms out? I'd rather just err on the side of caution. And that's what it feels like Trent Murphy was, erring on the side of caution. That's what feels like Vernon Butler is, mm-hmm. erring on the side of caution, which is weird because Sean McDermott is not an overly aggressive coach. I'm sorry, not an overly conservative coach. He is an aggressive coach. You look at the fourth down, you look at the neutral pass rate. All these things indicate to you that Sean McDermott is not Dick Geron, which is what everyone thought he was going to be when he came in. Oh gosh, it's a zone-based cover defense. It's going to be defensive-minded coach. He's going to be Dick Geron. He's clearly not Dick Geron. That has been proven wrong a million times. But in this one aspect, he has an overwhelming slice of conservatism to him. And it's kind of weird. But like you said, showed up with Trent Murphy, showed up with Vernon Butler.
Yeah, it's like, to me, he's conservative with the personnel, right? Like it takes a lot for him to trust a player, and he's probably working through that and likes, you know, like you mentioned there, those security blankets and some of those familiar faces. So as we consider what we've seen from this Bills defense through six games, and, you know, I think everyone would agree that outside of the second, third, and fourth quarters against Tennessee, the Bills have been playing lights out on defense. And so the important part is sustaining this moving forward and playing at a high level throughout the rest of the season. And so when we consider that, for the Bills to win the AFC, to go to the Super Bowl, what are the defensive keys in your mind for that to happen outside of the obvious, which is staying healthy?
Yeah, I think staying healthy just goes without saying, especially when you have the biggest piece of plurality pie that I already mentioned being linebacker health. So if Edmonds goes down, if Milano goes down again, obviously big deal, not a fan. The number one thing for me is, where is Gregory Rousseau going to be at the end of this year? Because I think that we all just kind of came into the training camp thinking he was going to be a project, and he was pleasantly surprised, and he started the year in a big way. Okay, he's a real NFL defensive end right now. He has traits that can help you win right now. He was a big part of the plurality pie after the Chiefs' victory. He was a big chunk of the reason why they won that game, completely moving away from his impressive interception. It was the ability to set the edge in the run game. It was the ability to use that tackle radius and be able to get off and disengage from blocks. if Gregory Rousseau, who had probably his worst game of the year against the Titans, ends up coming on really strong in the back half of this year, if he ends up being a game wrecker, that's a big deal for the Buffalo Bills. I think his trajectory changes a lot with this team when it comes to the way that the defense could look at the end of this year versus the way it looks at the beginning of this year. The other thing is the people who have played better. Let's specifically look at Tremaine Edmonds and Taron Johnson. Those two players maintaining their level of play. I don't even need them to get better. Getting better is great, but it's about the development of Greg Rousseau, and it's about the stability of the level of play that we're seeing from Tremaine Edmonds and Taron Johnson, two people who there were question marks about coming into this year. Not huge ones. Nobody thought they were going to cut them, but it was all right, and one of them's already got an extension. So hopefully Taron Johnson doesn't find himself in the spot where he was last year before the Chiefs game, where the staff was not happy with him. And hopefully Tremaine Edmonds continues on this trajectory. But for me, it's those three players. It's Rousseau improving, it's Edmonds, and Taron Johnson maintaining.
So I encourage everybody to listen to the Bruce Exclusive podcast. I make it a priority every single Thursday. And your Thursday podcast this week was obviously, a lot of it was dealing with the loss to the Tennessee Titans. And you had some really good nuggets in there about fandom and processing losses and those types of things. But as we take a second here and kind of laser in on the Tennessee game, and I don't want that to be a theme of our conversation moving forward, because the idea here is to reflect on six games and not one. But when you do consider the last three quarters of that game, and the reason I reference your podcast there is you put it really well on your podcast on Thursday. You said the only thing that stopped the Tennessee Titans over the last three quarters of that football game was halftime. It was that the clock ran out. Otherwise, they scored on every single drive. And so with it being a bye week for the Bills and a long stretch of games coming up, is there anything from those three quarters that gives you concern moving forward? Or is it a situation that, well, the teams coming up don't have Derrick Henry and the Bills should be fine? So, kind of expanding on those three quarters, and if there's anything in there that you think could be a concern the rest of the way.
I think a lot of that stuff was individual outliers. They just happened to be clumped together. Gregory Rousseau had his worst game of his career so far at the same time when the Bills didn't get a couple flags that could have gone their way. Now, that's not an excuse, because there's plenty of times where the Bills didn't get flags that could have gone against them too. But it was kind of a perfect storm. When the Bills turned the ball over, the Titans were already in their territory. When the Titans turned the ball over, it was on a deeper pass and the Bills weren't starting in scoring position. It was almost like a perfect storm, a perfect amalgamation of all the things that were necessary to be able to beat a team that is a Super Bowl contender this year. The other thing that I think is important to note is that sometimes I feel like depth on your team can make you overthink things. And that's what it feels like happened to me with, well, as I was reflecting on the AJ Epenesa inactive. And I was thinking about fantasy football and how sometimes if you have a deep team, you start to overthink things. You start to put your studs on the bench because the really good player you have on the bench has a really good matchup. No, they're your stud. You play your studs. That's the way it is. They're studs for a reason. And I feel like sometimes that happens with depth. The delineation between your studs and your bench players isn't quite as strong. And so you start to kind of find excuses to sort of fiddle with it a little bit. And we have to fight that urge to fiddle with it. I almost feel like that's what happened with Sean McDermott and A.J. Epenesa. A.J. Epenesa is a better player than your fourth special teams linebacker. And he's probably going to make a bigger impact on the game. But the Bills in that moment were like, we might be in base a lot more. So AJ Klein might be on the field a little bit more. We don't want to wear him out with three snaps and here on defense and then also run out in special teams. So you know what? We're going to go ahead and activate that other linebacker. Like, it almost feels like they overthinked it a little bit. They overthought it a little bit. And so for me, I think that I don't know if there's anything I can take away from this particular game as far as a trend that would move forward. I don't look at that and go, okay, now that's going to be a problem, because it feels like everything's an isolated incident that just happened to happen in groups, along with the weird overthinking that we haven't seen so far from Sean McDermott this year. And so all those things just kind of, each one provided a little piece of the pie in regards to why the Bills lost that game.
This episode of Locked On Bills is brought to you by McDonald's, proudly serving communities since 1965. McDonald's has always been more than just a place to get tasty, affordable food. It's a place where friends and family can come to reconnect, a place where classmates can meet up for a study group knowing they'll have dependable Wi-Fi and endless supplies of French fries and McFlurries. Win or lose, it's a place where teammates, competitors, the home team or the away team can come to recharge. It's a place you're always looking forward to stopping at on a long road trip to rest your legs and refuel. I personally love that McDonald's serves breakfast all day long. The Egg McMuffins and the Bacon, Egg, and Cheese biscuits are delicious. So head to your local McDonald's to refuel and reconnect. Did you know that Built Bar has so many delicious flavors? There is something for everyone. They have coconut, cherry, raspberry, mint brownie, double chocolate, cookies and cream, orange, strawberry, salted caramel. So many great flavors, and look, maybe you want to try them all. You can. Get yourself a mixed box. You'll get two of each of the nine flavors. You can try them all and figure out which ones are your favorites. And not only are Built Bars the best tasting protein bars on the planet, they're healthy too. Check out these macros. 17 to 18 grams of protein. Calories range from 130 to 180. Only 4 to 5 grams of sugar and only 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. The flavors are amazing. They're all tasty and they're all healthy. I've got a deal for you. Go to BuiltBar.com and use our promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your next order. Again, that's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. Our guest today is Bruce Nolan. He's the host of the Bruce Exclusive Podcast, as well as Food for Thought with Nate Geary, all on the Buffalo Rumblings podcast feed. Bruce Exclusive every Thursday. The Food for Thought live stream is Friday nights, and then it becomes a podcast for you on Saturday. And of course, make sure you're following Bruce on Twitter at Bruce Exclusive. I think I covered it there, right?
I think you did. I'm impressed. Were you reading it, or did you just off the top of your head?
Honest to God, off the top of my head. I'm a fan, wow. Bruce. I've told you that many times. So I'm pretty dialed in on your work. I love listening to you talk football. And, you know, like I mentioned, we had Nate Geary, your co-host for Food for Thought, earlier this week on the podcast. And he informed us that you did a on-the-spot Bill Clinton impersonation. And he said you aced it. And he asked me to put you on the spot for an impersonation. And I told him, I said, Nate, there's one thing I know about Bruce. He doesn't really like being put on the spot. And so I don't know if I'm going to box you into it, but if you have an impersonation for the people, I'm sure everyone would love to hear it. I had some requests in DMs. People hit me up on impersonations they'd like to hear from you. Peyton Manning on a 3rd and 4 was submitted. Venom was submitted. So we can completely balk at this, or if you have something, you know, we'd love to hear it.
I think that my wife thinks that my Marvin the Martian is probably the best impression that I do. I would imagine if you were to ask my wife, she would say Marvin the Martian is probably as good as I do. And of course, he talks like this. He goes, "Hello, I'm Marvin the Martian Mahan. Oh, now you've done it. You've made me angry. I will destroy you with my T-36 discombobulator." So, yeah.
Nailed it. Everything I hoped I would get when I put you on the spot for an impersonation, you delivered. And thank you. And I'm sure the people will thank you for that as well. So I guess I kind of spoiled this next question that I had lined up for you by, you know, extrapolating on your Trent Murphy comment and getting into Vernon Butler. But I think it's pretty clear that this team values defensive linemen and they're always going to have lots of them and they want to rotate them. And so I'd like your thoughts on this defensive line rotation at this point in the season. How do you want to see it evolve? Are there players you want to see more of, players you want to see less of? Just overall thoughts on how they're utilizing their talent on the defensive line that they've made a high point of emphasis to acquire.
I want to see more AJ Epenesa, and I want to see even less Vernon Butler. Those were my answers that I wrote down before. And you say, well, Bruce, I want to see even less Vernon Butler. Yes, even less Vernon Butler. I think that you have some decisions to make on Harrison Phillips this offseason. So I don't see, if he's a better player and you have to get more tape on him, why would you not play him? He's better than Vernon Butler. in the pass rush game. He's better than Vernon Butler against the run. And you need tape on him because you need to make a decision this offseason as to whether or not he's going to be your one tech of the future. And so far, I don't think you have enough information to say definitively that he is. I think that if you came into this year with an opinion on Harrison Phillips, it was, okay, he's fine. But I mentioned earlier about Star Lotulelei, the fact that, okay, if Star comes back, we hope we have one competent one tech. I wasn't leaving out Harrison Phillips. I don't know if Harrison Phillips can be a starting one tech in this league. If you held a gun to my head and made me say yes right now, I couldn't do it. So you need to see more of him as a necessity. So I want to see more of A.J. Epenesa from an impactful standpoint. I want to see more of Harrison Phillips because you got a decision to make. I want to see less of Vernon Butler because you know what Vernon Butler is at this point. There is nothing surprising about Vernon Butler. I have no idea what the deal is, but a little bit like Bobby Hart, he just keeps getting roles. He keeps getting jobs, right? Yeah. And I don't know what he offers. He offers size, but he doesn't play to that size. Mm-hmm. He is ostensibly the biggest defensive tackle on the Bills roster, but that's on the scale, not necessarily in practice. So that's not it either. So I want to see less of Vernon Butler. I want to see more of AJ Epenesa because I don't think that if the mindset coming in was, well, we need to be strong against the run, so we're going to deactivate AJ Epenesa. I don't think that tracks. Because I think AJ Epenesa has played really well against the run this year. So I don't think that's the reason why that would be reasonable for deactivating AJ Epenesa. I think it was a numbers game. And I think, as you mentioned on your pod earlier this week, I think it was a fourth special teams linebacker versus AJ Epenesa. And I think they made the wrong call on that. So I want to see AJ Epenesa. I want to see more Harrison Phillips at the expense of Vernon Butler.
You didn't mention two names there. Jerry Hughes, Mario Addison, two veteran defensive ends. Both in contract years, Jerry Hughes has played the most snaps by a notable margin of any defensive end on the team. Mario Addison still claims quite a bit of market share. I think he's been fairly effective. But when you consider those two players and their role moving forward, any thoughts? I mean, are they delivering to the level you expected? Is there more for them to achieve? You know, Hughes and Addison are two guys I'm interested in your takes on.
The reason I didn't say that I want to see less of them is because of the word want. I don't want to see less of them. I'll be okay if we do see less of them. I think they perform completely reasonably. I do. And so I went back and forth on this a long time. And I said, okay, the obvious answer here is let the young guns play more on defensive end, see more AJ Epenesa, more Groot, less Jerry Hughes, less Mario Addison. That's the obvious answer here. However, as you mentioned, I think they've been playing okay. I think they've been playing fine. And for me, it's not a strong enough sentiment for me to say want. If we happen to see less of Hughes and Addison because Epenesa and Groot are getting more, I'm okay with it. Want is too strong for me. I can't say I want to see less of them. I'll understand if we see less of them. I'll be excited to see more of the other people, but I'm not itching for it. And that's why I couldn't go as far as to say one, because I think they perform completely reasonably. I think there's plenty of times when Mario Addison has been one of the better defensive ends on this roster. So for me, it's just not strong enough. I can't say want. I can get to, I'll be okay if they take less snaps, but I can't get so far as to say I want them to.
I have a Bills D-line take that I don't think I've said yet at all. So I want to put this out there for the first time, and I want to get your reaction to it. I think that the Bills are surprised that nobody on this defensive line has had an injury yet. When you consider how many they kept, if I'm not mistaken, is it 11 defensive linemen? They traded Darryl Johnson, and you know, there's times where three of these defensive linemen are sometimes inactive. In my mind, I know they value the rotation, but kind of like what I do with fantasy football, and we'll keep bringing up fantasy football references. There are times where I have like a surplus on my roster, but I know it's going to take care of itself because someone's going to get hurt. I can put them on IR and I'll be fine. Is it crazy to think that maybe the Bills are a little surprised that everyone's been healthy to this point and they really haven't had to make any adjustments whatsoever to their 53?
Absolutely not a crazy take. Absolutely not a crazy take. Especially when defensive line is such a heart and soul foundational piece of what you want your defense to do. You're like, listen, we're heavy in that spot. We know we're heavy in that spot, but you know what? Stuff happens. Stuff's going to come up. This decision will essentially be made for us. The inactive stuff. Yeah. And one of the reasons why a little fumbling could have been happening with the inactives is because they didn't think they were going to have to make it. And then all of a sudden they have to make it. And they're, I might say they're unprepared. Like Sean McDermott, I wouldn't accuse them of being unprepared, but you kind of thought the decision was going to be taken out of your hands by forces beyond your control. And then it ends up not happening. And now you have to make a call that you really weren't expecting to have to make. So I don't think it's a crazy take at all.
Yeah. I remember when Marquez Stevenson got injured and, you know, Brandon Bean was commenting on the 53-man roster. And he said, you know, we're going to put Stevenson on IR and that'll get us down to six receivers. It was like, to me, that was something I pick up on all those little things that are oddities within Bean and McDermott because I listen to them so much. And when something's kind of like a little off scent, you know, I pick up on it really quick. And when he said that, I was like, yeah, you were never keeping more than six. And you're somewhat, I know this is a weird way to say it, but you're somewhat relieved that you had someone to put on IR to kind of settle this entire issue for you. So, I think this checks out. So thanks for affirming my take and not making me, you know, sound like an idiot, like I won't say an idiot, but like a crazy man here on my own podcast.
No, that's the right thing. You said it right. It was get to six.
Yeah.
So we can get to six as if six was a goal that needed to be achieved. And this was helping them get there. So no, that's not crazy at all. So we can get to six. We wanted a specific amount. And now because of this injury, we're going to get to that specific amount. So no, that's not crazy at all.
All right. I want to close things out today by working through three players on the defense, some that we've already talked about, just kind of get your takes on some polarizing players. And some of them have, well, actually all of them have expiring contracts in the very, very near future. So let's start with Tremaine Edmonds. He continues to be a polarizing player for this fan base to discuss. I think he's been awesome this year. I mean, the last three games, I think he's really, really played at a high level. So your take on how he's playing, and then, of course, this contract situation that's looming when it comes to Tremaine Edmonds.
Edmonds has been fantastic this year. It's been his best year ever. I mentioned already the concept of the blip year for 2020. I'm kind of hoping that catches on. I think it's kind of a fun narrative. But if 2020 is a blip year, he just picked right where he left off in 2019. It's going to be tough to pay two linebackers that amount of money. But if you're able to get Tremaine Edmonds for $16, $17 million, right? If it's not an $18 to $20 million contract, then all of a sudden that starts to look a little bit more reasonable this offseason. And this is coming from a guy who has said multiple times, if he held a gun to my head and made me pay Fred Warner money to Tremaine Edmonds, I wouldn't want to do it. Well, that was based on the information I had at the time. I have different information now. Tremaine Edmonds has been playing really well. If he keeps it up, then we're going to be having a very similar conversation to Tremaine Edmonds this year that we had to Josh Allen last year, which was, man, he really took off. Like he really, really, really took off. And then next year, we're going to be having a different discussion about Ed Oliver. But for right now, if this level of play is the level of play I continue to see from Tremaine Edmonds, I'm probably going to be in the go ahead and extend him because there are other contracts the Bills can get out of that I'm not willing to sacrifice Edmonds to keep those players. Players like Darrell Williams, players like John Feliciano. Brandon Bean has openly said, when I do some of these vet extensions, I do them with the idea that sometimes the rookie can end up taking over for the vet in year two. That's something he openly said at the combine early on, and the contracts reflect that. You can get out of John Feliciano. You can get out of Darrell Williams. If you made me pick right now between Edmonds or the two of them, I pick Edmonds. Now, I know it's not identical, right? It's not the cap savings for those equal the contract for Edmonds. I get it. But it's conceptually fairly close. And I think that if you have an elite player at a position, you have to care about it. And Edmonds is becoming an elite player position. And I don't think he necessarily was elite the last couple of years we see him, but he has been this year.
Predictively, I would be stunned if Tremaine Edmonds doesn't sign a long-term extension with the Bills. Every piece of messaging coming from Leslie Frazier, Sean McDermott, and Brandon Bean has been positive towards Tremaine. And you've referenced it on your podcast. I've referenced it on this podcast. There was a game this season, and I don't know why I can't remember which one it is. But Tremaine like didn't even play in the second half, and he was not the most impactful player in the game. But when they did the locker room speech where, you know, Coach McDermott's in there and saying things after the game to the team, he gave Tremaine the game ball. And when he was asked about it in a press conference afterwards, he came out and said, well, we gave Tremaine the game ball because he's the leader of our defense. Like, I would just be completely stunned if Tremaine Edmonds doesn't sign a long-term deal with the Bills, regardless of your assessment, my assessment, anything like that. I think they love him.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. It was all similar messaging to what you hear from Josh Allen.
Yeah.
It was all the similar messaging. So we all knew Josh Allen was going to get extended, even whether we were pro or for extending this past offseason. Even the people who were like, maybe we should wait a while, like me, right? Even I said, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So I just want to go on record as saying, yes, if it was me, I'd wait. But just so you know, it's going to happen. And when it happens, I'll be fine with it. It's the same thing with Edmonds. Regardless of where I'm at, as far as my personal belief when this year is over, I still think it's going to happen. And when it happens, I'll go, oh, yeah, okay, cool. Yeah.
Let's hope they get a good value there. And I think Bean has done that. I think we've looked at just about every extension he's handed out and been a little surprised at where the numbers came in. And I see no reason for that to not continue with Tremaine Edmonds. Let's move on to Ed Oliver, another polarizing player for the fan base. Your assessment on his play and how they're going to handle his fifth-year option. I think you answered it really well in your podcast today, but I'll let you say that for yourself.
I think when it comes to Ed Oliver, the fifth-year option was created for players like him. The fifth-year option was created for, let's just get another year of data. I'm willing to absorb a fully guaranteed money contract for 1 year, which is what the option is. I'm a mini tag, if you will, to acquire more data. I think that Ed Oliver is going to have his fifth-year option picked up by the Buffalo Bills this offseason, and he will not be extended this offseason. And they will just take a look at it. Because for me, Ed Oliver still has flashes against single teams. There are moments, especially in the run game with Ed Oliver, which is weird because coming into this year, it was, okay, Star Latulay is back. He's going to absorb some double teams. Ed Oliver can really penetrate and get the pass rush. Coming out of college, it was, he's an undersized three tech. He's going to be quick and disruptive, and he's going to be a good pass rusher, but we worry about his ability to hold up against the run. Some of Ed Oliver's best reps are against the run game in single blocked. When Star Latulay gets doubled and Ed Oliver can forklift his guard back into the backfield and the running back has to stop his feet and try and move laterally and somebody else can clean up and make a play, that's not an uncommon occurrence this year. But it's kind of weird because it's not really what you were expecting. It's not worse than you were expecting. It's not better than what you were expecting. It's just qualitatively different. So if Ed Oliver is a undersized three tech who's incredibly strong and he plays with great leverage, and when you single team him on a block, he can make disruptive plays in the backfield against the run game, is that worth elite three tech money? I would say probably not at this point, but the fifth year option was created for things like this, where you can acquire more data. So for me, that's the obvious choice when it comes to Ed Oliver.
Let's close with Levi Wallace. And Bruce, you and I think in our relationship, we've talked a lot about Levi Wallace. And I think we've been eye to eye on him up until maybe June of this year. And I wouldn't sit here and tell you today that I absolutely love Levi Wallace as the Bills CB2. But as the conversation around Levi Wallace this offseason turned so sour that it felt like a lot of people just didn't think he was a reasonable NFL football player, I took kind of a step back and I came to grips with Levi Wallace as CB2 and what the team wants out of that position and what Levi Wallace delivers. And so I'm interested in your takes on Levi Wallace at this point and kind of contrasting your takes on his play versus what you believe the Bills' satisfaction level is with his play.
I think the Bills' satisfaction level with his play is fairly high. I think he's doing what they want him to do. I think that Levi Wallace has always been, from the moment he came into the Bills' starting defense, halfway through, three quarters of the way through, as he was a walk-on rookie. Is he who he always is? Yeah. He's who he's always been. And that is completely reasonable. I think that in the search for great, opposite Tre'Davious White, and that was exacerbated by the step back that the pass defense took in 2020. In the search for great, we have started to minimize reasonable. And that's what we did with Levi Wallace, like you said. It went too far. We went too far the other way. Levi Wallace is reasonable. The reason I pound the table for CB2 is because I don't want reasonable, not because Levi Wallace is bad. He looks almost identical this year to the last couple of years. And I think that there's moments where he's still going to struggle with people who are overly physically gifted. The other thing to consider is that the only time we started to see people who are really physically gifted was against the Tennessee Titans with a quarterback who could deliver, because it takes two to tango. You need a physically gifted quarterback and a physically gifted wide receiver. Got to have a wide receiver who's either really fast or really big and strong, and you have to have a quarterback who's willing to give him the ball. Those two things together are kind of Levi Wallace's kryptonite. We've seen him struggle with speed receivers. We've seen him struggle with players like Devontae Parker from the Miami Dolphins. But when the Miami Dolphins came around, it was Jacoby Brissett. And so that wasn't the issue. Then when the Titans came around, we saw a little glimpse of the things that we don't love about Levi Wallace, with A.J. Brown beating him a little bit on those ending routes. Tough, physical, good route runner. And I think the back half of this year, we're going to have to keep an eye on that, because Levi Wallace is playing reasonably. But Levi Wallace always plays reasonably as long as he doesn't have a physically gifted, really significantly physically gifted wide receiver too, and a quarterback willing to pull the trigger. And so as we look at this down the road, those are the things I'm going to be keeping an eye on, because Levi Wallace is, again, a free agent this year. Now, it's a little different this year because it's a unrestricted free agent tag instead of a restricted free agent last year. But remember that the Bills had an opportunity to let Levi Wallace go. So I do think they think he's reasonable, but another team could have swooped in and signed Levi Wallace. Nobody did. So I think the Bills are okay with his play, but I don't know if he's going to get extended another year at the end of this offseason, because nobody else really wanted him.
Yeah.
So it's going to be kind of a tricky thing to deal with, but there is no future CB2 on the roster, because if Dane Jackson couldn't beat Levi Wallace out this year, I'm not sure how comfortable you should feel about him just stepping into CB2 next year. So it's going to be another discussion to have this offseason.
Yeah, it feels like Levi Wallace maybe understands that his most valuable role is playing cornerback for the Bills, right? Like, there's players like that that are just in the absolute perfect spot for what they can do and what they can't do. And, you know, maybe he understands that, and he'll come back for another very, very modest contract. We just talked Bills defense, I think, for like 45 minutes, and two players did not come up. Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer, the best safety tandem in the league. And so before we get out of here, can you just affirm that?
Unquestionably. Micah Hyde, stan all the way. Jordan Poyer is amazing as well. Micah Hyde is one of my favorite players in the NFL, and consistently disrespected. I really, truly believe that the defense, I don't say falls apart, but loses their fastball without Micah Hyde.
I like and the way you put that.
Yeah, because, you know, you talked about that a lot this offseason when it came to this offense being a wide receiver-centric offense, and the signing of Emmanuel Sanders and what the Bills said about it, losing their fastball. Well, one of their fastballs on defense is don't give up big plays. Mm-hmm. That's a Micah Hyde stat. Not giving up big plays is a Micah Hyde stat. So I think if you lose Micah Hyde, you lose one of the things that makes this defense tick, and you lose your fastball. So I am all the way in. I love the defensive safety tandem that the Buffalo Bills have. And I love the fact that they're both signed for the Bills for a little while longer.
Man, it's not even like the Bills don't give up big plays. Other teams don't even try it. I mean, the average depth of target against the Bills defense year over year with Micah Hyde on it is just unbelievably low compared to the rest of the league. And it's a Micah Hyde thing, man. And I dread the day. I dread the day we don't get to watch Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer as a safety tandem for the Buffalo Bills defense. All right, folks, that's going to do it for us here today on the podcast. A big thank you to Bruce Nolan. Make sure you're following him on Twitter @BruceExclusive, the same handle over at Instagram. And of course, you're listening to his podcast, the Bruce Exclusive, as well as Food for Thought, all on the Buffalo Rumblings podcast feed. Bruce, per usual, was outstanding and always puts in a lot of work to make sure that his guest appearances are top tier, and today was no exception. So that's going to do it for us here today. It will not do it for us this week. Tomorrow, another episode of Herd Mentality is coming your way, and some really fun questions were brought to the table. So don't miss it. Make sure you're subscribed, rate, review, and share the podcast. Have a great day, and I look forward to catching up with you again tomorrow.